Welcome back to episode 204, 204. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well. So, thank you. So this week, a number of things to talk about that maybe do with kind of a potpourri of insanity that we're given. We of course we learned last night at 7 p.m. The Israelis and Hamas had signed a ceasefire, a truce. This was, I think, came into effect at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursday. What we had here was, of course, this latest war was stirred up by the Israeli government. I guess it was sparked by some, I guess, some Jews or Zionist extremists engaging in some race riot targeting or a pogrom, if you will, against Palestinians. Then there was the I think they fired at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during Ramadan. That's the holy month for the Muslims. And then, of course, there are these illegal evictions of Palestinian families that I think got the seal of approval by the Israeli Supreme Court. So it started this latest uprising or intifada. The State of Israel continues kind of to do these things, commit these atrocities, claim that they're being attacked because Hamas responded with rockets. Then Israelis, with much greater firepower, return fire, I guess, blew up some buildings, collapsed some buildings, even attacked the AP building, claiming, I think, didn't they claim the AP was harboring terrorists or something? So that's the same old story there. I mean, that's. I guess we in the United States have become sort of a nerd to this because we expect it every few years. Of course, our government, subsidizes it, pays for it, which is from an American standpoint, it should be our concern because, why are we so concerned about this little piece of land in the Middle East? That's the bigger question I think Americans should ask themselves when these I guess these little wars or skirmishes arise in the Middle East between the Israeli state and the Palestinians who have been dispossessed of their land to create the Israeli state. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just a clear-cut genocide. It's occurring in slow motion and incrementally, so easier to digest in the moral palate of the American public. But the fact is, it is just genocide flat out. I don't actually buy the, Hamas's response. I mean, they obviously had good reason to attack Israel. The Israel genocide is a steady state operation. I mean, they could basically have rationale to attack them any day of the week. In my opinion, Hamas is probably compromised. They probably have Israeli agents that will, produce rockets of a certain amount at a certain time to justify really draconian responses. And these responses then push the Palestinians toward the brink of extinction a few more steps. I point out Saudi Arabia as an example of a client state, that the Israelis and the Freemasons operate. In this instance, it's overt because Churchill, I won't go into the whole historical dynamic, but Churchill simply told Hussein, who was the president of Syria, that if he didn't do what he was told, which was basically promote Zionism, because that was what Hussein was opposed to, was how the Palestinians are being treated. He said he would just send the Saudi Arabian troops right at him. And he basically said in the letter that I control them. You know that. So Hamas, I think, is, is more clever, but it's just another Israeli sort of deep state operation that's used to have an excuse for the Israeli response. I mean, what it does, Tim, is that it keeps alive the idea that the Israelis have to defend themselves against terrorism. It sort of gives it creates a justification for all of the pushing out of the boundaries and how they treat Muslims inside the state of Israel, you know, things like that. So that's what it's for. It's just a theatrical production to keep the West, the population, numb. And I think the right response would be education, you know, another, instead of, trying to look to Hamas for leadership, the Palestinians should be finding ways to take their case in an articulate way to the West, and not engage in things which can be used against them as propaganda. They should be trying to go to the West with a clear message, particularly now that the independent media is well established. They should just come here and say, look, we're going to invest in the independent media and use that as the way to get to the American people so that everyone understands that, you know, this whole idea about us being terrorists and the Israelis being some kind of reasonable people, that this is just a fairy tale. This is propaganda. This is a racist, xenophobic, I wouldn't even call it a nation. It's just, a racial force that is genociding us right in the middle of your world. So, that would be how I would respond if I was, in a Palestinian at this point.
Yeah, I mean, people forget, but when Israel accuses Hamas of being terrorists, or they're confronted with terrorism all the time, is the Israeli state was created out of several acts of terrorism, and it's always been a leader in false flag terrorism, and that's just a matter of historical fact. People tend to overlook that or not be made aware of it because the Jewish control the media. The state of Israel, still holds and possesses huge stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, and far worse than Iraq ever had. It also has this huge nuclear weapons arsenal, which no one seems to talk about. I think it's the fourth or fifth in the world, and they use what I think incendiary weapons against civilians frequently, these white phosphorus weapons which are banned, violation of Geneva Convention. The media here, which is largely Jewish-owned or Jewish-controlled, doesn't report these things, or it doesn't stress these things to the American public. So the money spigots keep flowing. Via Israel, I think, as much as at least $4 billion a year. Probably there's a lot more of that in non-reciprocal trade agreements and all types of other goodies that the Israelis get. When Israel calls out the Palestinians for being terrorists, of course, they're overlooking the numerous atrocities that they've committed, even against people in the United States. I mean, you have the USS Liberty incident, and you have other various operations. You have that, of course, you don't hear about it, but you have that the Numic plant or something where they, this nuclear espionage where they stole a cache of weapons grade uranium and from a lab in Pennsylvania, and they left the site a mess or something. It was a nuclear waste dump. I alluded to the various false flag attacks against American and British civilians throughout the years. I mean, the famous, infamous King David bombing. There's a Levant affair in Egypt where they actually tried to start. They had people dressed as Arabs, and they were going to blow up, I think, American intersections there, and that didn't work. I mentioned USS Liberty. But even now, the Israelis are the chief exporter of technology to China, usually via espionage. Jonathan Pollard was a great example of that. Donald Trump recently pardoned him. He was flown back on Sheldon Adelson's plane, the late Jewish billionaire, and received a hero's welcome by Benjamin Netanyahu. The biggest question, of course, is how the influence that the Zionist state has in the United States. Of course, how is this accomplished? A lot of this is done, their control of U.S. foreign policy, at least their influence, is done by blackmail. And that's where Jeffrey Epstein played such an important role in this. Mm-hmm. But, the big issue here is why is the U.S. government unconditionally support this rogue state? That's the big question here. And that gets into the issue of the infiltration or control of Zionist agents within the U.S. government. The Biden administration itself is his cabinet is full of many dual citizens and Zionists. The White House Chief of Staff, Secretary of State, the Secretary of Homeland Homeland Security, Secretary of the Treasury, the Attorney General, the Director of Center for Disease Control, CDC, the Chair of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the CIA Director, the Deputy National Security Advisor for Cybersecurity, which came up recently with the pipeline issue. They're all Zionist Jews, and so this might give us an indication. So when we talk about, freedom for the Palestinians from their occupation, Americans might want to talk about maybe freedom from the American people from the Zionist occupation of America, control of America. So it's not just happening over there. The reason why the American turns a blind eye or ignores what happens over there is because the disproportionate influence that that Zionist and Jewish interests have in the United States.
I would recommend people read The Expulsion of the Palestinian by Nur, N-U-R, Mashallah, a Palestinian. I believe he is a Palestinian. Yeah, he's a Palestinian historian. Last name is spelled Masalha. And he has this created a number of books. He's a great historian, I don't know, 20 books, but The Expulsion of the Palestinian, he has documented and produces all of the letters that went back and forth between the Jewish Zionists from Herzl, in the creating and the start of the Jewish phase of Zionism, all the way up to the creation of the State of Israel in 1950. And the letters are absolutely transparent and clear. They had always intended to genocide the Palestinian people. There was no moral issue that that question was asked several times because they said, look, what we're doing here, there's going to be violence, we're going to kill people. Did anyone in the letter chain have any issues with that? Golda Meir, Menachem Begin, David Ben-Gurion, the most famous names in Israeli Zionism were all in this letter circle, and not a single person had any issue with it. So this is what you're dealing with, and now the situation that Mashallah, brings to the world, the clarity of the lack of any kind of human empathy on the part of the Jewish Zionists is extremely important, I think, for Gentiles to understand. But the overall historical structure of Zionism is also equally important, particularly if you want to use it as a template for the situation that we're experiencing today, which you very wisely, brought up this concept, in your statement. Because if you go backwards to the original Zionists, the proto-Zionists, you'll see they're all British Freemasons. Lord Palmerston, 1840. This is, 45 years before Herzl even starts the Jewish phase of Zionism. He and the other British Freemasons talk about now is the time for is the Jews to return to their homeland. And they worked tooth and nail every day in order to bring it about. It's a story we've talked about many times. I won't go into it here. But my point is that these individuals were crypto Jews. They were presenting themselves to the world as, Anglos. But the fact is, they did not have an Anglo understanding of the New Testament, right? This was a Hebraic understanding that they were operating in. And so then, when you get to the negotiating phase, say from 1900 up to 1950, you have this theater in which the Palestinians and the Jewish Zionists are both negotiating with the British for some kind of humane settlement to the whole conflict. But you can see, if you understand the structure of history I mentioned, that this was always that the Palestinians were never going to get a fair deal because both sides were controlled by the Zionists. The Freemasons who ran the British Empire were simply using this theatrical production to wait out the Palestinians, to slowly maneuver Jewish settlers in to the extent where they could, militarily dominate them. And so this is really what you saw with the negotiating process was you had the Jewish Zionists and the crypto Jews working together in such a way so that the Palestinian authorities didn't understand, why they kept losing every negotiating battle, right? Why all the promises would be broken. Well, I would say this is a really good lesson for the Americans public. Mm-hmm. Just as you mentioned, Tim, I mean, you have to look at the dual citizens, but then beyond that, you have to look at those who are controlled in other means by Jewish influence, mm-hmm. or perhaps are crypto Jews. So this is the fate that we are experiencing now with our lockdown, with our destruction of our culture and our freedom. This is just another more sophisticated process that's going against us, just in the same way the State of Israel was created by all of these, elements going against the Palestinians.
Yeah, and because the big financial moves that are being made, like with BlackRock, which is owned by, controlled by Larry Fink.
Yeah.
And how, you see what's happening, like with real estate, and the destruction of the small businesses. And there's almost like it appears that there's an 8 to 10 year program to destroy the middle class. And that's that's apparently if you look at it, the financial outlook of it is that's what they're trying to do. That's what it appears that and so far they're succeeding, because they're in the meantime they're paying everyone off with $500 or $1,400 relief checks, getting everyone addicted to universal basic income,
Yeah, I mentioned before we started the show that I saw the data that over $8 billion had been directly given to churches, American churches, during the lockdown, which is, more than 100,000 per church. So, and then I made the sad comment that that was the 30 pieces of silver that was given in exchange for the right to have religious freedom, that the churches who took this money, the administrations, they all have blood on their hands, in my opinion. They sold out their congregation just so that they wouldn't have any cash flow issues during the lockdown. It's just disgusting.
Mm-hmm. So they don't need a collection plate when they got money under the table coming in. No.
Yeah, you don't need a collection plate when you have a wire transfer from the Federal Reserve or from the U.S. Treasury.
Why have Easter Sunday Mass? When you get that.
Well, I have annoying congregation members, that ask you to do stuff. I mean, you can just get money and have, solace in your church.
Yeah, and also then you meet them, you can lay people off too. They do that.
And they get money too. Yeah,
and they get money. It's like the bishop's just like a CEO or something.
No, there's no question. I mean, I haven't actually studied this, but I'm willing to bet $1 million that is true.
Mm-hmm.
I know one religious organization I know someone who's well in the administration, and they got money for every single salary. Every laid off employee was taken care of, and the organization also received these grants too. So it was a dual buyout. Everyone who was an administrator got money, and the organization got money. Not hard to understand. They just paid them off.
No, yeah. So, this week there was interesting things with Anthony Fauci, Dr. Fauci, and the masks. apparently, a year after more than a year, I guess about a year of mask wearing, it was declared it was no longer necessary, according to the CDC, latest guidelines, to wear masks. Last week, the CDC suddenly reversed course. Supposedly, if you're fully vaccinated, you can resume activities that you did prior to the pandemic. Fully vaccinated people can resume activities without having to wear a mask or physically distance, except required by federal law, state, local, tribal, or territorial laws, rules, and regulations, including local businesses and workplace guidance, whatever that means. If you haven't been vaccinated, go get vaccinated, I guess is the message. Oh, what has changed. Only a few months ago, I think it was in February, Dr. Fauci warned that Americans may still need to wear face masks through 2022 to protect against the spread of COVID and its emerging variants.
Did you see the billboard that had Jon Stewart, Bruce Springsteen, and John Bon Jovi?
Oh, what was the message? No, I didn't. What is this?
It had a huge billboard sign saying, "Wear your frigging mask." And the three of them were masked, and they formed a triangle with Springsteen and Bon Jovi up front on either side, and then Stewart far in the back. The eye of the pyramid was all the way at the back. But you know, when you think about, you know, the rebellious rock and roll legends, you know, of the 60s, and then you now see this collection. I mean, the kind of the MK Ultra aspect of the music industry is just more and more visible, you know.
But it wasn't, I mean, I guess it wasn't too long ago where Fauci was saying you have to wear two masks, you know.
Yeah, that was only like 2 months ago. I mean, this guy is just so mercurial. And why, you know, of course, if there was a real media, he would be called on it immediately because he may be senile. He's old as
he's 80. He's 80.
Yeah, and he can't remember, you know, like wear a mask, don't wear a mask. 35 cycles is incoherent. I mean, he drops truth bombs almost as often as he ratchets up the lockdown. He's just a bizarre character at this point.
But remember, at the beginning of the pandemic, he said there's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better. It might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is. And often there are unintended consequences, like people fiddling with the mask and they keep touching their face. And that made sense, you know. Now, even the Surgeon General at the time, Jerome Adams, you can increase your risk of getting it by wearing a mask if you're not a healthcare provider. Folks who don't know how to wear them properly tend to touch their faces a lot and actually can increase the spread of the coronavirus. Then it suddenly changed. In May, I think, of 2020, wear a mask. And then the CDC said it in June, said wear a mask, not providing any evidence, scientific evidence, that these things achieve the objective of, you know, providing sort of a prophylactic protection against the spread of the virus, nor did they ever address the fact that, you know, the health effects of wearing these masks, the inhibited breathing, the hypertension it creates, the hypoxia, and also the disease the fact that the mask itself, when worn over a long period of time throughout the day, your breathing gets wet, itself becomes a magnet for bacteria that you breathe in, not to mention the particles in the mask. So it never made any sense. And there, I think, as many as 12 studies, random studies, that showed these masks are not effective. But nevertheless, you know, the propaganda was there. They kept saying this. So, I mean, it's just one of those, again, just shows the idiocy of it all, yet the effectiveness of propaganda.
I mean, we are, humans are, Americans are as easy to control as like a Pavlov dog. You know, they're told to wear the mask. The reasons are you're protecting other people, whatever. And now, some people are addicted to wearing masks.
Yes.
You know, in Trader Joe's, they aren't requiring you to wear masks, but people are still wearing them.
I still see people driving alone in cars with them.
People driving alone in cars. And, you know, when you talk to someone, you can really just see how the cognitive dissonance from the fear and from the propaganda, because they aren't naturally this stupid. They've been moved into that position by all of the media. Like, I had this conversation. I said, well, you have your mask on, and say you have COVID. What do you think happens to the COVID, like, particles?
Yeah.
Where do they go? And the woman said, well, the mask keeps them from going out. And I say, so all of the COVID particles are stuck there in your mask? And she goes, yeah, that's where they are.
Well, you saw people did the test, like, in the cold, when you breathe.
Yeah, you can just blow right
through
it.
Goes at the sides, yeah.
You know, it's like at this point, you just, you know, Tim, I mean, it's cynical and I'm getting a lot of hate mail, but it's just an honest observation. It's a purification. I mean, it's sad to say, but their minds, the vaxxed minds, the people who have bought into this, who have followed the science, you know, off a cliff, they're impossible to, you know, they really can't defend themselves. They can't help the resistance. There's just nothing that you can do with them, and there's nothing you can hope for them for. They're gone. They're just, as far as I can tell, they can't really, the structure of their mind is such they can't be reclaimed. But the good news is that those who have been resisting and are skeptical were becoming more and more isolated from them. And this is ideal. I don't know if you've had the experience, but I've had a lot of people say, well, you know, we're going to have a social event. Have you been vaxxed?
Yeah.
I say, no, I don't do that. They said, well, we only let vaxxed people into our house. Have you had that experience?
No, I didn't.
I mean, I've had this twice now in the last week. We're only wanting to associate with people who had the vaccine. And, you know, you could go into the actual probabilities and, you know, how insane the concept is. And, of course, it's just ludicrous on its face because, well, wait a second. The vax is strong enough to give you protection against the virus, but so weak that you can't be around anybody.
Yeah, yeah. If the vaccine works, why wear a mask?
Yeah, so, yeah. But it doesn't. There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And then with this one individual, you know, I made a blunder and I started having a discussion, and she said, "Well, I just trust the science."
Yeah, they're okay.
Okay. There you go. Trust the science. So there it is. You know, the purification is occurring. I see more and more really active and good resistance going on. It's a smaller and smaller number, but it's still going to be hundreds of millions of people. We don't have to worry about the army at this point. I was going to mention, I want to recommend this one guy's site. There's this thing called 153news.net. You ever go there?
Is that a video?
It has videos, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just an outstanding site, in my opinion. There are shills, there are maniacs, and there is like brilliant insight from really honest people, and it's all in a big clump. This is what democracy should actually look like. This is what media should look like. It's chaos, but it's also, there's insights. And if you really want to dig into it, you'll find all sorts of just amazing and clear statistics you can't get anywhere else. And I wanted to mention this one guy who I really like, Welcome the Eagle. That's the moniker he goes by, is Welcome the Eagle. And he's a statistician. He's legitimate. That's what he does. So he's been following all the VAERS data, every single element of that the CDC has released. And so he has, he can show you like how many vaxes at certain day, but you can also see that at the end of April, that the bell curve of vaccinated people created a very steep right-hand curve. So it's going, you can actually see the thing going into zero, and you can see this is where the panic came in. But the point is that the claim that the vaccine uptake has really hit a stone wall, something you and I talked about months ago, has actually happened. They really aren't going to be able to go forward without force of arms and just vaccinate all of the American people. There's going to be, I would say, at least a third, just judging by the graph, that are going to be left. And then the other thing, sorry to be long-winded, but just the other thing that's really fascinating is he follows the adverse events and deaths. And he can show you that that through January, they were releasing the data, it seemed like, in a very clear relationship with the vaccine uptake. So the more vaccines there were, the more adverse events. But then at that point, when you got to like 4,000 deaths, they started to basically withhold the adverse events. And so what they're doing is they're just very slowly releasing them. So instead of the release being, you know, like within 2 or 3 days, which you'd think a computer system could do, in some instances now there are months that are like 4 and 5 months old that they haven't actually been updated all the way. And he points out that more than half of the adverse events that the media reports are from January or older. Now think about that. More than half are from January or older. That was when you got up to maybe 35 million vaccinations. Well, wait a second. Now we're getting close to 2,000. What is that number going to be when that gets filled in? He did some extrapolation. He said it's going to be way over 10,000 deaths and way over a million adverse events. This thing is so toxic, this vaccine. And I'll shut up after I point out that I had a sad week because I had a person I communicate with in the email. Her father is very nearly dead from the vaccine. There's no question. This is a direct relationship. And then a wife of another good friend, I found out 2 days ago, she'd had the vaccine three weeks ago, and she has been just ill as death all that time. Now, I also know many people who've had the vaccine with no reaction. Mm-hmm. My personal world, I'm guessing I've got, well, perhaps two deaths. Oh, gee, maybe 10 miserable events and over 100 that it's just a sore arm or something like this. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, I'm just giving you my experience of the thing. But I would hope that people want to get a really good picture of the adverse events and the actual death numbers of what they would be if it was all, you know, CDC wasn't withholding data. Go to that that site and look at Welcome the Eagle, his charts and graphs. They're very, very informative.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, none of this is necessary because there are established treatments for these. For this amulet in general, I don't know whether it's COVID-19 or whatever, respiratory disease, you know, but in order to get the emergency use authorization, they had to pretend that there wasn't they weren't established, you know, treatments for this, you know.
Yeah,
whatever
of course.
It is, you know, like I said, I think they've extrapolated or they've borrowed from general symptoms of respiratory diseases and things that can be caused by any number of things, fungus, air pollution, bacterial.
Yeah, pneumonia, the flu.
Yeah,
I mean, the flu season in L.A., if you go to like L.A. County Hospital bed, there's a whole data set on it. It gives you a longitudinal because it'll show you what it was in 2019, 2018.
Yeah, well, they paid hospitals that claim they were COVID patients. So,
yeah,
they're more COVID patients.
But the problem is the ICU bed use, the patient admin. I mean, it's totally normal year, nothing unusual at all. If you just put the data out and ask someone to pick out the year that's an epidemic, they couldn't pick one year from the.
Just the death from neglect brought about by COVID restrictions, because whenever you go into a hospital, even a nursing home, what keeps people alive are advocates, family members, loved ones. I heard just a harrowing account of an ICU nurse. Story that she was in there and there was just one man who had a stroke and he couldn't eat, and so they put the food there and he wouldn't eat the food, but there was no one there to feed him because he wasn't able to feed himself. So finally she fed him, but he'd gone 3 days without eating because no one was caring for him. Now if there his loved ones couldn't his wife couldn't care for him because of COVID restrictions, the wife is there, so she'll go in there and she'll make sure he eats and she'll even feed him. And just imagine that. This is why you had so many deaths, like in nursing homes. It was neglect.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. And this was mass murder.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim, this was mass murder. Don't let anyone like color it in any way. This wasn't, you know, a bad flu season. It was mass murder. Mm-hmm. They wanted to get the numbers up to scare the people, and so they created policy that they knew they were certain was going to just kill almost every old person that they could find. And they did. They killed hundreds of thousands of them. You go on the internet, you see this kind of testimony everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Nurses, you know, saying, oh my God, because the old people are just being left alone. Well, of course. And they say, well, it's COVID. We don't want it to spread, so we're not letting them interact. They don't think this is going to kill the old people. They don't have protocols and understanding of what is likely to bring about the deaths of these people. Of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
They know that stuff and they implemented that stuff. And that's why they got the numbers that they got at the beginning of the pandemic, so-called.
Yeah. Well, they expedited or sped up the, you know, these people might've lived a couple more years. but they sped it up. And also just the psychological effect of being isolated, that would have an effect. And like the rate of decomposition when you're older is a lot faster physically, so yeah, it was wholesale murder. And
It's the world we live in, and these guys are in charge of the political system. I mean, this is beyond illegitimate. And this is why the vaccine, which we have talked about for how long now, like 6 or 7 months, before it was ever even something that people would take. It's just so obvious that it is malevolent, that there is something to the thing. I mean, it isn't just the deaths that you're seeing from the toxicity. Man, I am more and more convinced that the vaxxed are not just going to be kind of intellectually vacant, but coming up pretty quick, they'll be physically vacant. I mean, whatever this stuff is, long term, I think it's going to have really powerful autoimmune responses eventually. Could be wrong, but man, oh man, it sure is suspicious.
There was a interesting headline. Florida ruled to be in violation of science for not having more people die. There's that. This is Babylon B. While many governors followed science and shut down their states early and still have stay-at-home orders in place, Florida kept its beaches open through spring break and has already begun its reopening plans. Science says Florida should have seen skyrocketing deaths from COVID-19, but instead, Florida, despite its large elderly population has not seen anywhere near the number of problems faced by states like New York and New Jersey. This has been ruled to be in complete defiance of science. We had good science telling us Florida should have been seen massive deaths, said far right wing conservative Washington Post columnist Jennifer Rubin. And now Florida is undermining our trust in science by not dying. We cannot tolerate this. More Floridians need to die for science. California governor and science believer Gavin Newsom agreed. Ron DeSantis is a witch. Burn him, Newsom said about the Florida governor. Experts widely believe DeSantis used something anti-science like black magic to violate what science said should be true. There is now a movement by science-believing Democrats to actively try to infect Floridians to try to get their death count to match projections. Democrats have also called for DeSantis to put in some sort of science prison, a cage made using force fields or lasers or other science things, though it is unknown if it would be able to imprison him, considering his Floridian black magic. So.
Yeah, that's fine. I wish that some scientists would present to the public the amount of people who died in like states like California, New York, from overdose, from suicides, and from just raw misery.
Well, Dr. Fauci said, as a public health expert, those aren't his concerns. He only is concerned with infectious diseases.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, thanks a lot.
He
But
can't,
the thing
his
is
narrow, his
that,
focus has to be very narrow as an expert. So,
but you see, this is the thing is that even if Florida had the right hand of the bell curve hadn't gone to, close to zero like with every other state at the end of the flu season, they would still be right because the COVID deaths would never get up to completely, challenge the outright fatalities from suicides and overdose and the long-standing misery of poverty
Well,
and
it's
lack of
so, I
freedom.
mean, think about it. When they say some call someone, we talked about the whole comorbidity thing, that's been talked about for more almost a year now. Dying with COVID, dying of COVID, what they call cause of death. When death itself can be not like you get hit by a truck or something. When you get older, you're ill. If you have diabetes, you have multiple things. Whatever kills you, there may be multiple things that kill you. Death is brought about by cumulative things. It's not always just one thing. Not like a piano falling on you and you die, from head trauma or something, or get smacked. No, this at certain age you will die from multiple things, and it may cause heart failure or renal failure. I mean, renal failure I think is caused majority by diabetes, if I'm not mistaken. So what is it? So what caused? Was it his diet that killed him, or was it diabetes or his kidney malfunction? What's causing the death? Well, no, the whole lifestyle caused the death. It was a cumulative thing.
What about old age?
Old
I mean,
age, yeah. I mean,
yeah, and
yeah.
there's a killer if there ever was one. I mean, Tim, I'm 72, and I mean, look, if like the windows are not shut properly or the sheets aren't made right, I don't wake up. I mean, it's that
Yeah.
you're just as fragile as can be. There's just nothing you can do about that. The people in the old folks home were just sitting ducks, you know. They were nothing but comorbidities. The idea that this is a COVID epidemic is preposterous. People should be smart enough to see through that, but they can't. Just it's because the media control. We're like, the Palestinians in the 1920s. We were looking at this communication. I mean, in our case, it's between the scientists and the media, but the fact is, these are just two sides of a Masonic triangle, They're just in communication to create theater so that we don't see what is obvious, what is right in front of us, that the COVID got out and it killed all the old people who we wouldn't let see anyone who we put infected people in their homes with, and we reduced their food intake. I
Yeah.
mean, ridiculous.
Like I said, that one guy I heard you telling his father died of basically he of dehydration because no one was there to make sure he was dehydrated properly.
God, that is just so sad, man.
And he went down as a COVID death.
Sure.
And and what do you, I mean, you just think, of course that's going to happen. In
Well,
that
Tim, this is
setting.
too tragic. I mean, Trump tweeted just to raise the national spirit. He asked the question, who is the hotter tranny,
Yeah.
Jenner or Dick Levine? I'm just wondering, who is the hotter tranny?
Well, I guess from a mile away and through a lot of cheesecloth, I guess Caitlyn Jenner is more attractive.
God only knows, buddy. It's really hard to pick.
That starts from that, there was a meme that conservative girls are prettier than liberal girls. I think Jenna Ellis said that. What do you mean by that? And well, the whole point of that is that the more traditional a girl, usually the more feminine she is, that she will take better care of herself. So the whole idea was more wholesome, prettier. That's
Sure, of
generally
course.
true. So there was a joke. It was they were sort of trolling the left. Or, our girls are prettier than your girls, whatever. So then this is transferred to this tranny thing, which is just perverse because now you're normalizing some. First of all, Caitlyn Jenner, formerly Bruce Jenner, is not attractive. He is bizarre, and so is his fellow tranny, Rachel, formerly Richard Levine, and they're both should not be taken serious, nor should they be given any positions of power in our society, whether it's Assistant Secretary of Health, of all things, for someone with obviously with a psychological disorder, or with Governor of California, or just a pop icon. But then there's a reason why these figures are out there. They're created. This isn't something that comes out automatic, just by organically. This whole thing is created. The whole tranny thing, drag queen story time. It was created by a Jewish lesbian activist, Michelle T, and Radar Productions out of San Francisco, which was instrumental in disseminating the program throughout the country. The whole tranny thing is f funded by the Zellerbach Foundation, the Elise Haas Foundation, and also the Pritzkers. Now, the one common denominator in all those families is what? They're all Baptist. So this isn't organic. They're doing this. They're unleashing this thing on the country, and they're organizing it. So this is the reason why, of all the people to be appointed that position, why would the Biden administration pick that person? Does that instill confidence in our public health institutions? Jeez.
It's just a psychological attack on, European psychology. The idea that sexuality is fluid, not static. This is, a degenerate position, and that's why it is given to us. I mean, Tim, culture is always moving one way or another. And this is just a mechanical fact. And when they got control of the media, we have just been every one day at a time, just moving into a more and more degenerate culture. for the purpose of extinction and genocide. I mean, it isn't being done for the Brave New World. That's just a cover story. They're just dissolving the race into not understanding it even exists, and by breeding itself, with everyone else on the planet, and then of course by the fluidity of sexuality, even breeding with anyone becomes irrelevant because you're just this floating sexual appetite that really isn't bound by anything.
I was during this week, we're texting each other to some brothers of mine, and one was going back and forth about the Israeli thing and about Hamas and all that. One brother goes, poor Hamas, they're just terrorists. My brother was taking the anti-Israeli position, other brother. And I just chimed in. I go, well, at the end of the day, it isn't Hamas or Palestinians that are indoctrinating your kids with transgender ideology in the schools.
Right.
So let's say, look at this. Here's another thing. The Biden administration sets to prioritize transgender migrants seeking to cross the U.S. border. This is how bizarre this is. The Biden administration, which effectively announced an open door policy for migrant children crossing the border alone, is expanding their priorities to include families with young children and people who identify as transgender. Vice President Kamala Harris called the violence against LGBT persons a root cause of migration. Now, do you really think that's driving migration from Latin America, Central or South America, United States, is the oppression of transgendered people?
I mean, it's hard to imagine like a gay parade coming up Mexico, these ideas are so, they are addressing a debased intellect.
Yeah.
This is really the fact, is that they just anticipate that the person is so intellectually debased, they can't think, that they can actually bring these ideas out. But, it's almost, rather than loathe it, I think it's helping with the purification. I mean, I think that, the people that buy into the media's debased Gentile formula, the sooner they're really not in operation as a political force, the better, frankly. This is sad, but this is the future, is that, I'm sitting here looking at the bell curve and it's going way down, and there's still going to be like 120 million Americans that haven't taken the jab when this thing gets to zero. And, you've seen they've upped the burgers, there's actually now like money they're paying people. I saw there was a guy who goes around and takes videos of the clinics that give out the vax. And he had some New York vax clinics, he would take videos of them and then speed up.
Yeah.
And I mean, no one was going in. There was like hundreds of people walking past these things. No one was going in. So, they have, picked the low-hanging fruit, and now they don't. I mean, all they can do is use the force of arms.
Well, you saw that Joe Biden's, Instagram? From now on, it's vaxxed or masked.
Yeah. I mean, he's so bizarre. Just insane. But the thing is, look, as far as I'm concerned, okay, they will try to genetically modify us at the point of a gun. How are we going to respond?
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to have that one issue that had enough clarity and enough lethality so that there would finally be a manly response from the Europeans, right? This, I think, is our moment. And there's going to be plenty of us left to have the response, and then we'll just see what happens once we get going. But I'm telling you, just by judging on the sharp angle of the decline in the vax, we're going to hit here a number real quick. And I've talked about it a number of times. I know, my prognostication has been very poor. I thought the dark winter was going to be just a hellhole with starvation, and it turned out to be almost, benign. They couldn't really do much. I think they were just trying to lure us with freedom in order to have that, as a carrot for people to take the vax. I think the goal was just to get the largest fraction of people vaxxed that they could.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't know. I mean, I think they may just back off. They may think, well, we've got enough. We're going to have some excuse as to why all these people are mentally enfeebled or they die. And we'll just deal with everyone else, you know, after the fact. I mean, who knows? I was so sure that the dark winter was going to be brutal, and yet it turned out to be, you know, they were actually thinking of another approach. So, will they go draconian? I mean, will in 30 days you'll start to see mandatory vax and prison sentences and, you know, who knows what all and military force, or will they just, you know, take another approach? I don't know at this point. I really don't understand.
Well, yeah, will the dark winter become the cruel summer?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, then maybe they're, you know, Tucker Carlson is now doing, exposés on aliens or UFOs rather. Yeah. So what's all that about? Maybe they're going to pull off a false alien encounter or disclosure, and it will be like the, you know, it will be the day the Earth stood still, where he emerges from the saucer, and he'll take his helmet off, and it's, you know, like Fauci with a miracle vaccine or something.
No, I think it's going to be a Dick Levine, luckily.
So I don't know. Well, one thing is, you saw that recruitment ad, the cartoon for the U.S. Army.
Yeah,
good with a little girl, a little valley girl, apparently, with the two moms.
Yeah.
With the uptick, with the voice and everything. It's and yeah. Then someone actually spun together, or at least he combined it, comparing like an ad for Russian military recruitment. That's all like, it's all masculine and rough, like an old military, it's a be all you can be type ad. But emphasizing martial valor and bravery and masculinity and all that. So I don't know. It's a statement. Like I said, does this mean this is the march to the institutions? The inmates are running the asylum now. They're just that wacky. It's this sort of woke military culture, right? What does it say? I mean, you had that guy at the U.S. Space Force who apparently wrote a book, Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Lemaire, commander of the 11th Space Force Warning Squadron at Buckley Air Force Base, was relieved from his post as head of Space Command over a loss of confidence and ability to lead. The decision was based on public comments made by the lieutenant colonel in a recent podcast. The Space Force spokesperson said in an email. Apparently, he said the military has been taken over by Marxists. I guess what they'd be, cultural Marxists. I don't know. And he said, earlier this month, Lemire, a former instructor at the fighter and fighter pilot who transferred into space for a self-published book titled "Irresistible Revolution: Marxism's Goal of Conquest and Unmasking of the American Military." I'm sorry, Unmaking of the American Military. Marxism's Goal of Conquest and the Unmaking of the American Military. "Irresistible Revolution" is a timely and bold contribution from an active duty Space Force lieutenant colonel who sees the impact of neo-Marxist agenda at the ground level within the armed forces. The description of the book reads. So he said, apparently, the institute, I think it's clear. I mean, the military, the war, it's always been a mass social engineering operation to begin with. I'm not going to, you know, say, but it wasn't quite as goofy or as ridiculous as it was. I mean, theoretically, you do need a military. You need people who can fight, who have martial ability. You need a, you know, a sort of a cadre of fighters willing to defend your country. But nevertheless, it's always been social engineering, our diet, a way of looking at life, you know, especially since the World War II, when so many people went into the military. And they do seem to have crossed a certain line with this, where they're promoting cultural Marxism and the silliness, where the military is now there to promote LGBT rights, gay marriage, you know, these things, which have nothing to do particularly with the core mission. So it says a lot that the institutions have gone this far. Also, when you say that the Army itself, Biden's Secretary of Defense said that he was going to just purge the forces, the ranks of extremism. And I read an article today that apparently now they're working with the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL in this effort to purge the military of right-wing extremists. Of course, not defining what that actually is. It's like white supremacists, I guess. They don't really define it. It's
why
best.
Why don't they just say European heterosexual males?
Yeah, normal people.
Yeah. You know? And the goal is to make the military look like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know,
Yeah.
I mean, so this is they're just using the ideas of the military that people have as a cultural battering ram. You know, I mean, this is why you're going to get tranny governors and all this stuff. Is that there is no appetite in the public to become transsexual.
No.
It just doesn't exist. But they do want to make sexuality as degenerate as possible. I mean, pornography has been a huge success for them, for the Judeo-Masonic project. It has really damaged European family production. It's been an enormous success. But the next step into you know, transsexualism, I mean, to do that, they're really going to have to damage the bodies a bit further. I mean, I think if you look at the sperm count being down 60%, and then you think of the toxicity, you know, that is inside the body, I think that there will be a blurring of the sexuals, the sex.
Well, yeah, you can produce damaged people, damaged goods as
sure.
a play, you know.
Yeah, damaged goods, and that's what it's going to be like, just like the frogs, you know, who are hermaphrodites, you know, they... The more toxicity, the less clarity of sexuality physically. And they'll take advantage of that, saying, well, this is actually a cultural phenomena.
Yeah, I mean, you can promote, you can create and then promote it. I don't think you'll ever get, you know, a majority, even a sizable minority, you know, expressing themselves in that way. They're, you know, they're psychological damage. But if you, you know, promote a toxic culture, promote things like sexual immorality, family breakup, you're going to get generations of damaged people who are, some are going to, you know, become narcissists or, you know, want the attention or the benefits that are offered when you identify as such, and they're going to be promoted. And, you know, so that's what they've done with the media. I mean, with Drag Queen Story, I talked about how, you know, how the Haas and Zellerbeck foundations promote that, you know, through the library system. Good example of how the library system is being used. The same way the military is being used is to promote these things. So they've seized these institutions that gain a certain degree of trust and have claimed a large amount of resources to change the culture. You know, so it is a march to the an example of the march to the institutions. And so, what point do they do this? Does the institution lose its credibility? I mean, obviously, you can't look at the, I mean, it's always been politicized, but I'm saying that people have always looked at the military as being sort of apolitical, although it's obviously war itself is political. I'm saying as far as being partisan or on these issues like war, you know, on gay rights and all that, or gay marriage and all that, it's not something that the military brush have an opinion on. Now they're openly promoting it, you know, so.
Yeah, no, well said. You know, I was just going to make one interjection. You know, you pointed out that in a heterosexual gene pool, they'll never get anywhere or any large fraction of people buying into the transgender role. That just isn't going to happen. But I unfortunately think that their idea there is to use gene therapy to achieve that. I think that one of the long-term goals, which with our current gene therapy momentum that you know is going on, will be to insert you know, kind of improvements to sexuality that they have in mind.
Well, what do you think they've done with like estrogen mimickers and
well, of course,
in containers and food and the clothes we wear? Yeah. You know, Alex Jones. There's a whole meme out there. It says in 5 years, Alex Jones is always proven right.
Yeah,
you know, and he, remember, he's a longer. He's the gay frogs. People tend to make fun of him for that statement, but he is correct in saying that because of the chemicals and the estrogen mimickers and hormones and the chemicals being released into the ecosystems, that's disrupting the proper sexual development of these various species, like frogs. So males don't develop properly. The same thing occurs with the fetus, because every fetus starts out as a female. For it to be a male, it needs a rush of hormones to transfer. This is when they do transition. It's the natural transition that occurs in nature. They become male. If you disrupt that, you create ambiguity. You know, it's an example of toxic poisoning that's doing this. The same way that you have to poison people to transition later on. And so you're creating more ambiguity. Not to, you know, also in the culture, create ambiguity because of this is something that it's observed in society in a post-scarcity society where things are just too easy. You don't have to struggle for anything. The men become more effeminate. The women become more masculine. And they lose interest in each other. And then the whole culture, if you look around, the whole culture is promoting that. You know, there's no emphasis on, you know, physical rigor or masculinity, the use of these things. It's, you know, masculinity, particularly white male masculinity, is degraded in the media in these things. It's creating enmity and disinterest between the sexes, not only because these people also growing up in smaller, more dysfunctional families, so the male-female sexuals aren't properly understood or respected. It was a time people had large families. They had, you know, either, you know, they had female cousins or they had sisters. Sisters had brothers. Brothers had sisters. Families were intact. You could observe how the parents acted multi-generationally. All this is being disrupted by our atomized society, all in the name so we can become, you know, atomized consumers. And we can express ourselves as much as we want. And there's no prescription or model for people. And this is, you know, this is all planned. You know, you can lay out the plan that they did this with through the media promoting all these things. It isn't like this stuff just happens like summer afternoon rainfall. It's being engineered, you know.
Obviously, and that's why when you come to this, now we're suddenly under an emergency authorization act and a crisis, we have to submit to gene therapy. Gee, isn't that a little suspicious, Tim?
Yeah.
That these bizarre and artificial circumstances led up to this, we're close to being mandated to undergo gene therapy. What if we apply some skepticism and think, well, actually, they're going to damage us, perhaps sexually, with their gene therapy? And Tim, how would we know? You see, I mean, you have like Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson. I mean, the public, we know that we trust the science. And the only two things we know about the vaccine, there are just two things we know about it. It's safe and effective. That's what we know.
That's it.
So we know that. So therefore, we take it. But beyond that, if we turn into a seahorse, or you know, if we can't reproduce, or any of these other side effects, that was just bad luck.
If they think it's okay to give hormone blockers to children,
yeah,
why not do it in utero?
And mutilation. I mean, this is where they are. You know.
You know. So these people are ghouls. So yeah, why would you trust them in any of these things? You know, they don't see. I mean, the whole outlook is they don't see nature having any purpose or meaning or teleology. So it's all random. So they can change it. They can improve it. That's sort of their outlook on these things. That's,
well, and also they don't have any empathy whatsoever for Europeans, and they can slaughter them.
Yeah.
In the millions, and it isn't a moral issue. So somehow, at some point in their hierarchy, they lose all of the empathy for other people. Somewhere, as you go up this chain of authority, there are groups of people who have the ultimate authority, who have that moral position. So that is how desperate a fight we are waging. Because they up there, it isn't. There's not going to be a truce. You can't surrender. They are absolutely hell bent to get us off the planet, one way or another. And if you want to stay on, you're going to have to fight. Mm-hmm. That's it.
It came out this week that New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was paid $3.1 million advance to write his COVID-19 leadership book last year under his publishing contract. And he'll make another $2 million on the memoir over the next 2 years.
We're all in this together, Tim.
Yes. Now, how much is that per nursing home death? $5 million.
I got it. It's peanuts.
Might this be the way that he was paid to do this, pull this whole thing off in New York? I mean, I can't imagine his book was flying off the shelves or people were buying it at Amazon. I have people buy books now. So isn't this, I mean, you look at who buys these books? Like Barack Obama's book. I don't know anyone who reads that. But it's like $10 million. Like, isn't this, a way these guys are paid for their dirty deeds? I mean, it's
There's always, it seems like the dirtier the person, the higher the book
yeah.
advance.
So then Lori Lightfoot, the esteemed mayor of Chicago, says she will only talk to non-white journalists now. She's not going to call. She was upset that the press corps is too white, so now she's only going to talk to non-white journalists now. I guess, but her wife is white, well, she's Jewish, but she's white. So that's Lori Lightfoot. She's worried about that. In the meantime, I think murders were up 33% since April 1st and 43% over last year in Chicago. Most of those are black people, by the way. It occurs in a few black neighborhoods in Chicago where most of that occurs. But the big issue is how white the press corps is.
It's interesting. I mean, you would think that the right response here would, if you're white and you live anywhere, or you live in the her mayoral jurisdiction, is that no matter how draconian the cost, you just get the hell out. You cannot stay there with a racial mad person in charge of the, of the city. And then that should get done immediately. I mean, anyone who's still there should just get out. And then hopefully that would create the conditions where the African American community could then take a real clear look at this person. Now that we have the city to ourselves, we might want to look at Lori and try to figure out, well, who funded this despot? Where does she come from? What does she represent? And then maybe they could take action to put a real mayor in place, because I don't think at this point, what can you do with it? It's just completely the there's no civilization there to try to save virtually. It's just a lost cause.
Well, the so-called black community has been so, I think, decimated and destroyed the past 50, 60 years that they don't even, I don't think they have the agency or the resources to even act in such a way, politically. As I mean, even if they were allowed to choose their leaders, none of us are allowed to choose
Right.
our elected leaders. But I think the model is for everyone to be treated or kind of turned into what has happened to the blacks the past 6 years.
Yeah.
80% illegitimacy, everyone on UBI or some welfare or some program or somewhere, in stacked housing, and this kind of just living for the day to day, not have any. Remember, we were told that planning for the future and these things, these are all attributes of whiteness, and not apparently black people have very very high time preferences and these things. Very insulting, but they it's the African Museum that said it. But I think that's the I think the goal here is just as to and that's the whole thing of promoting degeneracy is promoting illegitimacy within the overall white community has had its cultural effects and moral
Absolutely.
effects.
It's a particularly sad thing for me because when in the 70s, I spent a lot of time in Chicago. Never lived there, but I maybe would spend like 2 or 3 weeks every year there. And I was spent a lot of time in Chicago. And I really liked the bar culture in Chicago. Wasn't much of a drinker, but I would go out and just spend the whole evening going from place to place. Because of how interesting the people were to hang out with. And at that time, a lot of the most fascinating conversationalists that I would encounter were black. There were these old black guys who had kind of seen it come and go and were they were certainly caught up in the racial issues, but they had a high level of articulation and a very interesting kind of sense of humor I would think, I was very attracted to them. I thought they were very wise, very interesting to chat with. And to think about that group and then looking at the videos of Chicago now, I mean, it's I think it is kind of a there is a a racial a difficulty, in seeing into other groups, the issues they have. And I think a lot of people just don't know how far down a lot of white people, to use an expression, don't know how far down African American culture has declined. They tend to, you know, they the images, you know, they first learned about black people watching Shaft, you know. And so they had this pimp and hoe culture idea that was artificial, but that was how they kind of picked up on, well, this is what's going on in the inner city. But believe me, before that, there was just this, I thought, really beautiful culture that had a chance to become something. You know, there's a parallel to it. It was Palestine before the Zionist invasion. You know, people, they say, well, it was a land without a people. It's insane. Look at the videos and the pictures of what the country was like before the Zionists invaded. It was almost, you know, Garden of Eden. It was a real hotbed of culture and of humanities, you know, moving up. And all of that was destroyed by the Zionist invaders, just like the poor African-American community was just wiped out by a Great Society program and then Hollywood and the cultural Marxists.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And of course, the same people who established the Zionist state are control of Hollywood. So
yeah,
we're back to that common denominator.
Yeah, isn't it odd? Shocking, you know, that would be the case. But so that's why, you know, when you see these maneuvers, you really have to think clearly, you know, like, should I take the vax or not? Well, I would say don't, because you really want to do a little research into, like, well, who's promoting it, what's in back of it, you know, and if you do that, I think you'll come to a clear understanding. It's just stay away from it. Not far, Tim. We don't have far to go. I think they'll vax a lot of kids. They'll probably get a few college students, but I think they'll probably, you know, within 30 days, 45 days in the outset, they'll be down to really the whole thing will ground to a stop. And now will come the fun. Now we'll see what happens. What is their next maneuver?
Do you follow, like, Mark Crispin Miller at NYU?
No.
He's a professor there. He runs one of the classes on propaganda. He made a very interesting. He's been around because he's been in some trouble at the university because when this whole thing started, he was very skeptical of the pandemic, the response, and mask wearing, and all that. And so he was.
He teaches a course in propaganda.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I am familiar with him. Thank you.
And he's the one that said that. And he says, and
they tried to kick him out. Yeah.
Yeah, and it turns out that Larry Fink is on the board of NYU. Larry Fink's the head of BlackRock. And so what they don't want, and I was listening to an interview. He was talking about why are they so concerned about me. And Catherine Austin Fisher's interviewing him. And he said, well, she found out that you follow the money. Larry Fink on the board of NYU is they don't want any opposite opinion or even skepticism because it's part of the plan and it's all part. And of course, BlackRock's been a huge beneficiary of this, of the whole lockdown, the centralization of wealth and the transfer of wealth, which is really behind this whole thing. And so they can't have academics like that pointing, having classes, teaching students these things. He made the point that the fact that he was forced to do a Zoom class, he says, the fact that we're even doing a Zoom class is propaganda. Because it's making us in fear. We have to be in fear of each other. In fact, you have to wear a mask. And he pointed out to the students that there's a 12 random tests that showed that masks are not effective. So why are we wearing masks? And so that he got in trouble with his university. Now he's now suing them.
I read some stuff he had written, and I thought, you know, it's I would love to have someone like that, you know, just come out with the position that I was blackballed from the university because I'm a European, and this is just Jewish hatred of Europeans.
Yeah, he won't go that far.
Yeah, but something clear like that because this would at least force them, you know, to respond in a way that they're, you know, the public might catch a new idea or two. Because one of the things, you know, is like they have this song and dance they always go through. I mean, you know perfectly well they're kicking this guy out because he's a representative of traditional, you know, European culture. But they, you know, he's an anti-Semite or this or that. but they never fight back. They don't use the moment of media exposure to actually try to give the public some clarity, which I think they should do. You know, particularly since their academic career is shot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, land a blow on your way out that helps the public see what's going on.
Yeah, but the action is so ham-fisted and over the top. And then there's the fact that you have students, like you have some of these students, maybe the students are set up that students are now trained to be offended by any opinion that they don't agree with. And they call that being attacked or harassing if a student or a professor has a view which they happen to disagree with.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, this is great. I mean, in my opinion, just okay, the university is a cesspool.
Yes, that's exposed to the corruption of academia.
The teachers are, you know, I mean, hideous monsters and cultural Marxists. The students are that want to stay in this environment. I mean, you're not people who want to hang around. Leave the university. Why would any like clear-minded and healthy European person want to be in one of these cesspools?
Well, the thing is, not only does university people have to like leave the university, they have to make sure the university collapses because he can't let it continue to have the influence and control that it has. It shouldn't be a citadel of power.
That would be a different problem. But yeah, you're right. You can't let these. But you see, I think one of the reasons why you know, it's like Notre Dame, you know, demanding vaccines. The people they should just leave en masse.
Yes.
They should just say, the hell with you, we're out of here. And of course, this should happen everywhere. There should be mass exodus from universities by European and African American students, right? Who are healthy, they should just get out and, in doing so, make a statement that the institution is a cesspool of degenerate cultural Marxism that is designed to destroy healthy culture. We cannot abide with it. We are leaving. And then the public will know that's what's there. And then when the public starts losing the illusion of the thing, then they won't support it any longer.
Yeah.
You know, don't go to the football games, the basketball games. Don't give it money. Don't send your kid there. Just the university system it's an absolute waste of time at this point. So have organized homeschooling and give, you know, skill training. Now that everything's online, it should be very simple. You don't need to stand in these, you know, traditional areas, which are now just disgusting cultural Marxist cesspools. Get out of there.
Yep. Get out of there. Start your life.
Start your life. Exactly.
Get a job. Learn some skills. Have a baby.
Married. Have a family. Purification. Work on your sperm count. I mean, when you're in the university, they're going to get you on either with alcohol, with Prozac, or with Adderall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things are just everywhere. You know, I mean, I can remember when family members went to university, I couldn't believe the alcohol that was available on campus. And now I understand what was going on. I didn't at the time. They were just narcissizing all of the young people to basically debase them to make them easier to control later on in life.
Yeah.
That's what happens at the university.
Yep. Okay, Joe.
Hey, Tim, it's going to be an exciting week coming up. The purification is
continuing.
We'll see.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too. Thank you, Tim.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.